Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around. Here we are, another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
Special guest today.
Dennis and Darren.
Dennis and Darren. The great Dennis
Rodman.
Dennis
and Darren, huh?
Well, we'll give you top billing, Dennis, of course. Darren's new book is Aiming High. I think we talked about it once before on this podcast. It's the subtitle is How a Prominent Sports and Celebrity Agent Hit Bottom at the Top. And then Dennis very kindly joined us as well today. And last time I talked to Dennis, I said, Dennis, did you ever imagine you'd hear the words Dennis Rodman and Nobel Peace Prize in the same sentence?
Yes.
Not even close.
I disagree. I think those words are aligned now forever. You may not get the Peace Prize, but I'm just saying people are acknowledging that you were onto something.
It's all good, Dr. Drew. It's very nice to see you, man. Nice to hear you right now. So it's very we turn it off right there. So the last one I saw you, Dr. Drew, it was very awesome to see you, man. And, you know, this is a very special day for Darren Prince.
Yeah, tomorrow is. Tomorrow we're going to be at Barnes & Noble, right?
Well, Darren and I got to meet at the White House. In fact, I got to get back into that because the stuff that's coming out of there is concerning me a little bit. But I was very impressed with Darren Jeff Sessions and his whole move because that has moved the battleship a little bit. Darren?
Is that where you were there, Darren?
I was there.
Yeah,
I was there in March.
You got to work. That's a microphone there. You got to use
that
thing.
Were you that optimistic about it with Kellyanne Conway leading the opiate brigade?
I figured something had to happen at some point. I really did. Whether it was a priority or not to them.
No, but Dennis's I just got to say, Dennis's thing with North Korea made me believe maybe Kellyanne Conway and Jeff Sessions can solve the opioid problem.
Well, Sessions certainly is working hard at it. He has turned the battleship a bit.
But not to change the subject, Dennis, what about when the press secretary called you when you were in Singapore? Sarah Sanders?
Yeah, that was very emotional.
Can we bring it back?
That was
to
very
that
emotional, though. You know, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that part. I thought that the fact that when I went over to Singapore to try to just to see the leaders get together, it was amazing the fact that just me being there, just seeing this corporate that history was making. And I was there and I was happy to be there.
What did Sarah say to you?
You know, in Donald Trump's words, he's so happy for you, Dennis.
So happy for you.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Okay, baby. So, you know, it was just good to see that the fact that even though I've said it when I first started going to North Korea, I said it the first time and I said it today, I didn't care who got the accolade as far as like getting North Korea and America together. I will say, whoever gets it, please, let's do it because I think it's going to happen. I've been saying it for 7 years, and all of a sudden, Donald went over there. He tried to make peace with Kim Jong Un, and I hope it does work for the future.
How did you get the instinct that there was some possibility there? Because to the rest of us, it looked like impossible at the time.
Yeah, it was funny though. I was with in Donald Trump's his office in New York. And when I first went there, Donald said that, Dennis, it's a great thing that you're doing going to North Korea. You're doing a great thing. And it was amazing the fact that when Donald started to play this little game, as far as like, well, I'm not going over there. I'm going to call him a rocket man. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And it was amazing how that I was telling people, I said, Donald did one thing that people didn't recognize. He said one thing before he walked into the summit. He said, I can tell in 1 minute, I'm going to like this guy. And it took him 5.5 hours to come out and say, you know what? I like this guy.
but it seemed like he had the door kicked open from the beginning, which is a hard call.
But let's go back to Celebrity Rehab for a second, Dr. Drew. And there was a moment for Celebrity Rehab viewers. If you remember, Dennis told you how the world works.
Yeah, but that didn't go on TV.
It didn't go on TV?
No,
it
didn't make the final cut.
Dennis, do you remember you told Dr. Drew how the world works, and there's God, and then there's sports heroes, and then there's movies. movie stars and rock stars. I like the fact that movie stars and rock stars are on equal pavement, because I always thought movie stars were above rock stars, but apparently they're equal. And then politicians are under that, and then everybody else. Mm-hmm. And he was right. Once again, Dennis Rodman was right. Because when you confronted him, Drew, he said, four presidents have kissed my ass.
I think it was five.
Five presidents have kissed my ass. And that when men get around...
Now six.
Now president of North Korea.
Seven. Trump.
Both pushes. Yeah.
Dennis, you are correct in how the world works. I just want you to know that.
No, It's all good, though. You know, the main purpose of why we're doing this today, Dr. Drew,
yeah.
I'm very happy with the fact that I'm with Darren Prince.
Yeah.
And he's doing some really amazing things, man. You know what? In Jersey, in his hometown, I think the epidemic is called fentanyl.
What is it?
Fentanyl is really bad.
Fentanyl. Oh, yeah, it's bad.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's very bad right now.
No, listen, Dennis, Darren and I were talking before the thing heated up here, that we want to go out and do some speaking together to try to, you know, Darren can tell his story and his dramatic story of recovery and stuff, and then I can help people make sense of it. We want to go out there and talk about it. But be that as it may, you may not remember. There's two things I want to focus in on. One is a Darren thing and one's a Dennis thing. Bob's telling us about how the world worked, but the part that you missed, Bob, that Dennis told me about how the world works, he said to me, now this is the part I like, because he said, Dr. Drew, you and I will have a relationship. We don't have one now, but we will get one, so long as you understand how the world works.
and you understood.
And I said, okay, I'm willing to deal.
But the theory, like everything with Dennis, is just no holds barred and honest, and that's what I love.
Yeah, and,
I
right. and we did.
And the fact is, I went to the Lakers game. You, Darren, you were there. I, you know, when you look around courtside at the Lakers game, it's the titans of industry, it's political leaders, it's movie stars and rock stars, and they're all bowing down to LeBron.
Yeah, wanting to be near sports athletes.
That's crazy, but Dennis, right. I'm telling you, when you said that thing 10 years ago, I thought you were out of your mind. I now believe it is true.
And so the other issue is I wanted to say something about Darren. Oh, the Darren, Dennis, called me when you were on Celebrity Rehab. I don't know if you know this. And he was regaling me with his own recovery, except what was wrong, Darren? Right.
I was on Suboxone.
Yeah, you were not sober.
Yeah, I was on the opiate block for 14 months.
Sometimes our greatest advocates are not sober.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I was on Suboxone. I'd still have a few cocktails with Dennis. I was on a mood stabilizer, antidepressants, anxiety medication. Oh. And I thought I was sober because I wasn't doing the opiates.
Yeah, that's pretty close Makes to sense, what America right, Bob? Believes now. Right.
Yeah, that's a lot of people believe that. A lot of people would – and a lot of doctors would co-sign that too.
Well, the newest
one
is marijuana.
Yeah.
People are smoking marijuana and claiming they're sober and it's a replacement for opioids and all that.
And my position on that is better than the opiates.
Yeah, me too. I agree with it.
How about the fact that Dennis Rodman has never done a drug in his entire life?
I love that.
Can we talk about that? Which is a huge misconception.
Yeah, how about that one? How about that one?
But I want to go back to North Korea for a second.
Wait a minute. Let's just go on that. Not even acid when you were like 11 years old, Dennis?
Not even weed. Nothing.
No acid?
The stuff he saw in Dallas.
Oh, no, man. No. Thank God.
Yeah. Well, because a lot of times people claim that people like you and me and crazy people that are no holes barred, that somehow we had a drug experience that made us that way. No, I think we're just this way.
No, the stuff that Dennis told me about he used to have to deal with in Dallas, particularly during the riots in the 60s, that was enough of a trip. That was enough.
Sleeping in backyards.
No. Stepping over dead people.
Oh, yeah. Remember, Dr. Drew, that we had a conversation a lot, and that one day that you had to go to London to see your wife?
I went to London to see you?
Yeah, you had to fly to...
Remember when you had to leave for like a week or so, and you had to leave to go...
Yes. Jesus.
Who'd you...
Yeah, so, you know... Hold on, Dr. Drew. I'm not that... I'm on top right now because you have to leave and say, you know what, guys, I have to leave for a week. I have to go see my wife in London.
Yeah, that's weird that you remember that because I don't. But now you mention I do. That's crazy.
You said, Dennis, take over. I said, okay.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I would. No. I would put people in charge of stuff.
Yeah.
And you guys.
And Dr. Drew, it's amazing though, when you walk outside, you had your Porsche Cayenne, and someone hit your car, remember?
I do remember that. It was an old black Cayenne, that's right.
Come on, Dr. Drew, you're a smart guy, man. Come on, baby.
I'm a smart guy, but I've got an old memory.
The behind the scenes of Celebrity Rehab is probably better than Celebrity Rehab.
Well, because what people don't know is that there was...
I can't believe that... Dennis kicking the knowledge down to the world of how the world works was not on television.
No, there was a lot of good stuff. It bothered me that it wasn't. I know. But I want to go back to Kim Jong-un and Korea. How did you know that there was potential there? I don't understand. Did you just know he was a fan and you thought, God, I wonder if I remember there's a human being there, I can reach him? What were you thinking? How did you figure that out?
It was amazing, Dr. Drew. Good question. When I first met him, it was like by accident. And when he did the Harlem Globetrotters, he just asked me to come up and meet him upstairs. And he walked in, and I saw this little small Japanese guy walk in, and I see 10,000 people standing up, clapping. And I'm sitting down. I wonder, why are they clapping? I thought they were clapping for me. And I'm sitting there like, okay, shaking my hand. And I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Because of the way the world works.
Wow. All about him again.
For me.
All about him again.
It was amazing. I was like, oh, my God, they love me. I said, wait a minute, hold on. And this little short guy walks to me. He walks towards me. He's like, wow. And I still didn't know who this guy was. I never met the guy, right?
Does he speak English?
He don't speak English at all. He came over. He's waving. I still don't know who this guy is. And next thing you know, he sits down, and I keep asking, who is this guy right here that people love so much? I didn't even know who the guy was. Wow. I'm like, okay, great. He said, this is a supreme leader. I said, supreme leader, who is that? You know, I'm like, I'm so stupid. You know, so I'm like, okay, great. But so I'm like, okay, great.
And the reports were that he's a fanatic about the Bulls. Was he a fanatic about the Bulls?
That's right. How it started.
Yeah, he loves Chicago. Chicago, man. He loves Chicago Bulls, man.
Vice Media came to me about a year before it happened.
What?
And I didn't know anything about North Korea. A lot of people didn't at that point. And they showed me a photo of him in boarding school wearing a 91 Rodman Bulls jersey.
Does he speak English, Kim Jong-un? You know?
No.
Did he speak English?
No.
Did he attempt?
No.
Translator.
And
because he went to school in Switzerland, right? And that, I guess, Korean. But did you organize the whole thing?
I organized the whole thing.
So what made you think that was a good idea?
So here's what happened. I talk about it in my book. This is amazing. So
how much have you thought? I managed Dennis Rodman. Here's what Darren thought. I managed Dennis Rodman. How much trouble could he get in North Korea?
It wasn't even about the money. They came to us. They changed the date four different times. And I kept calling him, Dennis, oh, you're going to Korea, And then finally the contract.
Was it just sort of an appearance?
With the Globetrotters. He was going as a player coach with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Okay. And so, was this a world peace sort of a thing?
No. At that point, it was just an international exhibition game any other country that we would have gone to. And I finally got the contract from them signed. I go downstairs to Steve in my office. Steve's historian, real intelligent guy, not half brain dead like I could be, like Dennis could be. And I'm like, Steve, Dennis is going to frickin' North Korea. I'm pumped. I finally got the deal signed. You know, Psy, the gangman style guy, he looks at me and goes, you frickin' idiot. That guy's from the South. What are you talking about? He's not going to North Korea. And he's like, you better get Dennis on the phone right now. So he calls him up and he goes, dude, Darren just signed a deal for you to go to North Korea, not South. Dennis is like, whatever. And he goes, can I explain to you about the North? Dennis, I'll never forget this. He goes, dude, just make sure I'm protected. I get in and out safely because who knows, maybe something historic could happen by me going there.
Wow.
Never for a second.
Is that in your book?
For a second did he say, I'm not going.
Is that in your book?
It's in the book.
All those statements. Yep. Oh, my God. Yep. That's history. Right. That is world history.
And then
right
Nate
there.
Called me 2 days before when he was in Beijing on the stopover. And the producer said to me, of the documentary for Vice, said, you're about to have the most famous person in the world on your roster. I'm just telling you right now. I didn't know what he meant. And he goes, this is going to put the wedding dress to shame with the amount of exposure he's going to get.
Right.
And I woke up at 4 a.m, like everybody else, that picture of Dennis next to him, that epic photo in time, and it was a complete shit show.
And and so you thought at the time, I imagine, that hey, well, I'm just I'm imagining.
Not that the wedding dress at the bookstore wasn't a shit show.
A shit show. Really?
What a run. He comes back. We got a wonderful pistachio commercial. We got the Foot Locker commercial. It gets the Newsweek cover. He opens up Saturday Night Live. Our heads were spinning. We're like, what the hell is going on?
But it was conflicted, right? There were people judging him.
No, that was the next time.
It was 50-50.
The next time is when you really got criticized.
The first trip they were judging. I think it was 50-50. It was the second and the third trip that when he went
now,
back.
Now, that's where I want to pick things up for a second. Dennis, as your chemical dependency counselor, who I love you dearly, I was watching the morning news, and I saw my client had relapsed and was in North Korea live on television.
With a drunken meltdown.
Because you know, I get a little crap from people for my client's behavior, and I got a lot of texts that morning. Right. Oh, great job you did with Dennis Rodman.
And it's funny. I did not get any grief.
And so I really, in my mind, Dennis, I thought you stayed up all night and you were drinking Jägermeister out of a coffee cup like you like to do. Is that pretty much what happened?
They don't have Jaeger over there, right?
No. What?
You were tired too. You weren't as drunk as you seemed.
No, I was tired. I was saying, but either way, I'm just saying though, so you can get the real story. The fact that you know what, I was over there. They love to drink, and I love to drink at the time, stuff like that. So basically, I said some weird things that out of context, and it was just you know things went south. And when I came back, I got so much havoc about what I said. And then next thing you know, I get off the plane in Jersey, New York. Darren said, "You're going to turning point." I said, "What turning point?"
I got a re-up. I'm on the board. I don't want to hear it. I'm like, I'm getting death threats.
You went right to rehab?
I'm like, the FBI's calling the office.
You said, "You're going to turn point, Darren."
Were you actually sober at that point, Darren?
I was sober.
Okay. Yeah. And so the FBI, because that was a very confusing time, right?
Yeah.
The FBI's calling you. Why?
To debrief him, the state. I mean, they all wanted to talk.
But in retrospect, it's not clear why they were so upset, right?
No.
Yeah.
It's against protocol.
He violated protocol, but he was a private citizen.
What's the word?
International decorum. No,
treason.
Treason?
They were trying to get him on treason.
What?
And he gave gifts that were free gifts, not paid gifts, that he picked up in Beijing. To Kim Jong-un and his family, and they were trying to get him on that too.
For what would that be?
So,
what is that called?
I don't know what it is. Some sort of.
There's a lot of laws, Drew. I don't know if you're aware of this. There's a lot of laws.
We had to hire an attorney to squash it. And I was like, I can't believe this guy just came back after a meltdown. Let him go to freaking rehab. And
so, Dennis, were you aware of these treason allegations?
No, I wasn't aware of that. I was the fact that, you know.
You can laugh about it now, thank God.
But then you went back.
I'm laughing at it now. You know, back then I wasn't laughing.
But, no, it sounds awful.
But you went back and crushed it.
Like I said, you know what? You know, but it was amazing that, you know, since we're talking about this whole North Korea and the drinking thing, I think the fact that when I came back, that was like what you did to me, Dr. Drew, that you tried to turn my life around. And when I came back from North Korea, that's the same thing what Darren did, because he knew that I was in danger at a particular time, and he tried to protect me. And he said, "You going to turning point?" And I thought he said, "Turning point? What? Like my life?" He said, "No, you going to rehab." I said, "Okay, great." And I didn't want to. I didn't want to go.
But there was a bit of a shitstorm. So why not go to treatment?
It was. As Darren said, it was a shitstorm.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Like I said, you know. It's very difficult to explain what me and Darren relationship is as far as like client to agent and stuff like that. It's so hard that people don't understand that, you know, you can always have a friend like that in your corner, no matter what, good or bad. I think you know about that, Dr. Drew, because you have so many people in the world, brother. So many people in the world you don't even realize. And guess what? That's what Darren's doing right now. He's been doing it for a long time. So it's amazing that, you know what, I'm lucky to have that guy in my corner, because I need people like that in my corner to keep me on a straight and narrow road.
Dennis?
He's been doing it with this book called Aim It High.
Yeah.
So you know what? If you read the book, and it's so Aim It High about athletes, people around the world. It don't matter if you got money or you got fame or anything. You broke or poor, living in the street. This guy is trying to do everything he can.
Yeah.
He'll knock down the gates of the White House to make his point across, and I give him credit for that.
No, not only that. Listen, when I met Darren at the White House, I just went. We started talking about you.
How crazy is
Charlie?
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Shirley.
Yeah, we were talking about you, and he said to me, he goes, you know what? I got him to have dinner with Shirley, and I was like, oh my God, Darren, you're no. Listen, and I said I said exactly what you said, Kid Dennis, which is that he's got you. This makes all the difference in the world that he's listening to you, that you're getting his mom involved, and that this is it was just great news.
And Shirley loved Priscilla, my beautiful fiance sitting here. Remember, Dave?
Okay, Darren, you got something to equation, right? Priscilla, really?
Yeah. Well done, Dennis.
Well done.
Dennis, really, Priscilla?
That's 20 years of show business right there.
Covered all the bases. But Dennis, I want to go back to the third trip because I don't understand, and Darren, you're going to have to help us with this too, how you go from allegations of treason to, hey, I'm going to do that again.
Trump gets elected.
Was that the third time?
The
third time was with Trump.
There was a 3.5 year break before he went back again.
But that was because Trump was going, or it was there.
Trump was president at that point,
so you could do it.
It all changed once Trump got.
And that's when Potcoin sent us the cryptocurrency.
Celebrities aren't going to get convicted under Trump. Come on, Drew. You know how the world works. Dennis told you how the world works.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm learning. I got to be reminded.
Wait a minute. Let's get it from Dennis. Dennis, where is Trump on that scale? So he must be up there with the sports icons or God. where is Trump on the Dennis Rodman world of how the world works?
Put it like this, man. You know what? If you look at Dr. Drew, and you see something about Dr. Drew, I'm going to give Dr. Drew credit right now. Dr. Drew is with the guy Epstein in Houston, and the guy that's on Sunday morning, you know.
The preacher?
Osteen, that's his name, right?
Joel Osteen.
Joel Osteen, I think Dr. Drew is on his level. And I think that the fact that Dr. Drew has touched and affected a lot of people's lives. Now, I think that the fact that Darren is on that path right now. He's on that path right now to try to do the same thing Dr. Drew is doing right now. And I think that if we can all come together and try to make some type of difference to people in the world, because we can't change the world of the drug addiction overnight.
Well, let me ask you this.
Makes Dennis different than everybody else.
No, Dennis has insight. Dennis has a certain kind of vision.
Said.
Yeah, yeah.
Because everybody could say, well, I'm rich, I'm famous, I'm whatever. But that wanting to make a difference
is the
thing that's so beautiful about Dennis.
So hold on. So let me ask Dennis. There's so much tribalism and this split in the country right now. Do you see any road back to healing us?
Well, I think that Dr. Julie, I think you've got more insight than I do as far as looking at people's souls and into their future. I think that God and Jesus didn't try to improve people's lives. All they asked them to do one thing: can I help you? That's what God and Jesus did. They said, can I help you? The only thing he says, put your hand on, let me hold your hand. Let me show you the way. Pretty much, that's what you guys are doing. It's going to help these people that's a dire need to try to straighten their lifestyle. And it's amazing that people don't want to understand it, because life is moving so fast that we don't understand how to slow down and take a breather and say, hey, you know what? Let me check myself first.
All right. Well, that's advice by itself. Just slow down, take a breather, get off the social media. So now they got the third trip. And so, what was that like? I mean, that was scary, right?
The third trip went a lot more in his favor. It really went a lot more in his favor. You know, he came back. He was stone cold sober. Did everything he had to do. You didn't see Kim Jong-un on that trip, but he saw all the delegates, the officials, and Dennis did something so brilliant. He handed them a book. This was right around – was it around election time that I'm thinking? Trump wasn't president yet. He handed them the Korean version of Art of the Deal.
Wow.
And it went viral. Yeah, you were out there with Vo. You guys picked up the book. You gave it to the Minister of Sports, and it.
But I'm saying anyway, Dr. Drew, look it up right now on your computer. Right now, you'll see it. Look at the picture. What I gave it
it's
to.
Unbelievable.
Okay, I will do it.
It was genius. It took over the
now,
internet.
Now, then you did. Is that the one we did the interview with Cuomo, the morning show, and you at CNN?
No, Cuomo
was that the second trip.
The second one.
Yeah, the second Cuomo. Was
I thought
in
that
Singapore.
was.
That was 5 months ago.
The
best one he's ever done.
Oh, but he was still unfair to him. I thought Cuomo
when he was in Singapore.
He always does. He treats him unfairly all the time.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's TV, man.
Yeah, it's TV. Yeah.
He was very complimentary when I did his show about a month ago. He actually said how amazing it was that you predicted that the door was going to open, and who would have thought that the door opened? Yeah. And the South and the North both gave you credit.
He didn't say that on TV, did he?
He did. He did. All right. Segment.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good.
It's on TV.
And how about Kenneth Bay a year after your meltdown coming out publicly saying that your rant raised awareness and he believes helped get him out?
Yes, it did. Wait a minute. What am I?
I got to go to dinner and let you guys know one thing, guys.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to talk to you guys today, Dr. Drew.
Is this the picture? Is this
I'll
the
see
picture?
You tomorrow, right?
Hold on, Dennis. I'm showing the picture. Oh, it's up on our screen. So I've got the picture of you handing the art of the deal.
All right, and Bob and Dr. Drew are going to come see us at the book signing tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
What time are you going to be there?
Yeah, what time are you going to get there?
1 o'clock.
What time it starts? 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock.
Yeah, he'd be at 6:30.
Yeah.
12:30.
Okay.
All right, if you're at 12:30, I'll be at
12:30.
All right, have fun at dinner.
All right, man. Good to talk to you.
All right.
See you tomorrow.
All right, guys.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Dave.
Bye, man.
So there goes Dennis.
Bye,
there goes Dennis.
We got still lots more to talk about, believe me. But it was great to talk to Dennis. Do we need to take a break at all?
No.
Okay. Does our producer need us to do anything?
No, just move on.
Okay. I've got your book. I got it on Amazon, and I got one from them. So the thing that, you know, because you're so closely associated in my mind with Dennis. These are the icons. Smoking Joe Frazier, my favorite guy in the world.
Can you tell that story? You were able to tell that story? You just told us off the air about the forearm?
Oh, about the arm. So a lot of people didn't.
He was the same as Dennis. This, I want to do some good. So from the moment he started being Smoking Joe Frazier, he was helping kids in Philadelphia. Like, it's crazy. How do you get associated with – look at what Magic Johnson has done for the world. Are you kidding me?
And
he basically destigmatized the most stigmatized disease in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
One man.
Yep.
Right? And so you are around these people. And that thing that Dennis has that I just pointed out, do good. Do something. Mm. Young millennial athletes don't have that. It's about their brand.
Yep.
It's about them.
Yep.
And you must recognize it because you're representing both types.
Well, to be fair,
what happens when that do something good for the world, when that generation dies off, because we will die off?
Wait a minute. For all we know, the athletes you've been discussing, when they were in their 20s, were not so interested in doing good for the world. I don't know. But I'm guessing that as they got older, that's when that kind of kicked in.
I don't remember in the 80s growing up.
Yeah.
Oh, my guys.
Yeah.
Joe
so
Montana,
let's give the millennials a chance to mature and kick into something as they get older. I'm hoping.
Yep.
I just have faith in that millennial group. They're just checked out right
now.
No,
but I mean, I've been criticizing musicians. You don't see a lot of musicians stepping up like we did in the 80s and 90s, using your voice to encourage people to vote, right? Because it damages the brand.
Mm.
Right?
Okay.
And I'm telling you, who buys Beyonce records?
Mm-hmm.
Not inner city kids.
Yep.
Right? And so there's a consciousness in our society that is so selfish, it's undeniable. I see it everywhere.
I agree with that.
Right?
Makes sense.
Do you think when John Lennon said, "We're bigger than Jesus," and then Brian Epstein and Capitol Records came to him and go, "Dude, you got to back off that statement."
Right.
He did not back off of that statement. Right? He said, "I'm trying to make a point, and you're trying to manipulate what I'm saying."
Mm.
And he would not back off at that point. Do you think there's any celebrity, musician, actor, and now I say young sports hero, who has that kind of guts to do the right thing?
Right. Where are they? They haven't come out yet.
It's hard to. Things are.
It's not hard, Drew. You want to be confused about it.
Well, I'm not confused.
They can't. They can't win. I know how.
How about this?
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's the problem. I know the handler's mindset, and then it jeopardizes.
You are a handler.
The difference is, I'll tell you the difference with my guys is once you become a global icon, there's not much you can do unless you're O.J. Simpson to dilute or scrub your brand. You're
already.
How
come they don't do anything?
Your legacy is already out of
place. So how come they don't do anything?
I think a lot of my guys have spoken out about certain situations over the past 5 or 10 years.
Young,
you know, something
young guys?
Comes up. You know, they do.
LeBron does. Let's say who the new generation.
I think LeBron is
LeBron
different.
Does.
I think LeBron is different.
Carmelo Anthony does. It'd Carmelo be great
has,
if he could score 20 points.
Yeah,
it would have
exactly.
a little backup.
A bunch of them stood up at the ESPY Awards a couple years ago. Remember?
Yeah, Chris
they were all
Paul,
on the
LeBron,
stage and Dwayne Wade, and there's a handful of them. But you're right. I also think what Drew said makes sense. You got to give these guys a little bit of time. You have to see what happens when they start thinking, okay, I'm going to be 30. Eventually, there's got to be an exit strategy.
And
what's my legacy going to be?
It's a confusing time and a vitriolic time. So you're scared. You're fearful. And they,
I
it
think
wasn't
it's
so
to protect their
then.
Brand.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
I talk to these kids all the time.
I'm sure
they talk
is.
About their brand. I talked to a 16-year-old girl who's talking about her brand yesterday. Mm.
Oh.
Like, this is the world that we've created.
Well, that's the social media, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, one little social media tweet that goes wrong, it could be over.
I know.
That's the craziest thing. My dad, when he was alive, one of his famous quotes when I was 14 and I started my baseball card business, your reputation is the hardest thing to uphold and the easiest thing to lose, and you only get one shot at it.
Biggest threat. What's the thing in business? It's something, something, O-T. It's like EBITDA, but it's another thing. And the one thing that when you're looking to invest in something, what is the threat?
Mm-hmm.
What could destroy
what could
this?
Take this down?
Yeah, what, yeah, what could take this down? And when you – in this modern era that started 2-3 years ago, there's a threat to every
all
industry.
All the time. All the time.
All the time,
yeah.
Right?
That's absolutely. The point. And they're aware. They're acutely aware of it. They're scared, man. It's a fear, it's a scary time. It is – the guillotines are out, man. I'm telling you. This is mob behavior. With the intent to kill, but their only move is through social media to get people fired.
The funniest thing, I was involved in the MTV Rock the Vote campaign, the original one in 84 or 88, I forget which. And it came out that two of the main spokespeople for the MTV Rock the Vote had never voted. It was Madonna and a friend of mine who shall remain nameless. And that, like, we had this meeting at USC, and they're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? The Rock the Vote people are like, holy shit. They're telling people to vote and they've never voted.
Of course. Funny.
I would prefer that over this, worrying about your brand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are the new kids that you're dealing with? Do you deal with kids – like right now, especially in basketball, people are becoming superstars in high school.
I don't –
you know what I mean?
Yeah, we tried going after some younger players over the years. It gets to the point, just like we're talking about, one little mistake could screw up everything.
Like shoplifting some clothes
exactly.
in
but
China.
Like, it's just to me, it's not
that
worth
ruined
it.
The baller brand.
Ruined it. Yeah, not a good thing. But you know, our guys, thank God, they all stay so relevant, topical, marketable. They're bigger than ever. They really are. I mean, Joe Montana's on how many Super Bowl commercials every time the Super Bowl comes around? Magic is nonstop. He just took over the world as the number one businessman athlete of all time. Hulk Hogan's in Saudi right now. I'm sure. I know he's getting.
Are you representing Hulk Hogan?
He's back with the WWE.
Did you read the conspiracy book that Ryan Holiday wrote?
I heard about it. Yeah,
so
I heard
good.
About it. Rick Flair, that 30 for 30 documentary was incredible. I mean, all our guys were very blessed. They're very fortunate. So to me, I don't want to go into that arena. We're safe where we are. Our guys, there's more work that comes in they can even handle. So I'd rather just stay where I am and not even deal with a 20-year-old that could screw up like that. And
it's
everybody's
crazy.
Emotionally
so,
invested.
Hang on. We got to take a break. We're having a little technical problem with your camera particularly. So we're going to get that all squared. We'll be right back. One of the most crucial components of addiction recovery is accountability. Part of what makes addiction so difficult is the inability to self-regulate. Now, this is especially problematic for those in outpatient recovery or pain management program. And while the facilities require regular urine tests to ensure compliance, frequently the actual tests are not even observed. And this led to an epidemic of falsified samples where patients either use someone else's urine or widely available synthetic urine. The result is a lot of addicts carry right on using undetected, and they get none of the benefits from treatment. The only objective test we have for addiction is the urine screen. Now, recently, I learned about a new solution that virtually eliminates the possibility of faking tests, even in facilities where they are unobserved. This is called ToxProtect, a DNA-verified drug test and lab service that provides 100% sample authenticity. ToxProtect was created by Genetox Labs, can be used in place of any standard urine drug test. It starts with simple one-time cheek swab to establish the patient's identity. Once submitted, each subsequent screening uses DNA testing to verify that that sample matches the patient. And additionally, ToxProtect screens for synthetic urine and irregular values that would indicate dilution or other adulteration. In other words, this pretty much guarantees accountability. I'm excited to see this service being used, and I think it will significantly improve an addict's chances for successful recovery. I'm going to be talking more about Genetox Labs and ToxProtect on future shows. Thankfully, ToxProtect is being used by more and more facilities every day. Be sure to ask for it by name wherever you or your loved one is receiving care. To get more information or share it with your facilities, go to drdrew.com/ToxProtect. That is drdrew.com/ToxProtect. Hydrolite is the best rehydration product I have ever seen. I, for quite some time, was planning to invent something like this. I just kept saying, we should be able to put a fizzy tablet in a bottle of water, and it would have enough solute, we call it, because water is not enough. You need something in it, sort of a salt-like solution, and electrolyte replacement. I think most people know that, but they don't know that most sports drinks don't provide that, and they do provide way more glucose than Hydrolite. So what you need is Hydrolite to do it better than any of the sports drinks. In fact, Hydrolite comes in great flavors, orange, berry, and lemonade. It's available in a pre-mixed drink or a powder. Of course, I like those effervescence tablets because that's what I imagined. And they're easier to cart around. And boy, you can get rehydrated right away. Just drop it in a glass of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. You understand? That's the difference. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or Hydrolite.com/Dr. Drew. Again, Hydrolite.com/DRDREW. And for a limited time, our listeners save 30% on Hydrolite. Just click through the banner on my website. Use the code DrDrew18 at checkout. That is DRDREW18 at checkout. So either go to my website and use that code, or go to Hydrolite.com/DRDREW and use the code DRDREW18.
And we are back. I'm looking at Irvin Magic Johnson's comment on aiming high.
Yeah.
In the forward.
I mean, it's crazy. It's Magic, Bird, Smoke, and Joe Frazier. I told you last time I saw you. I have a picture of Ali and Frazier after the first fight in Madison Square Garden, the promos for that in my living room. And my children look at it and they're like, who's that? And I say, those are two of the greatest men who ever lived.
Yep. 100%.
So, you know what I mean? So we do all bow down to sports icon.
No, go tell them the story about the forearm.
So
got to get on that mic.
About Joe Frazier.
I did it again. Joe grew up in extreme poverty in Beaufort, South Carolina. I think he had 10 or 11 brothers and sisters, and he fell out of a treehouse one day. And his arm, when it broke, they had no money to take him to a doctor or a hospital, so the mom did the best she could to set it. When she said it, he used to show me when we flew. It almost defied the center of gravity. There was no way to defend.
It went out?
Yeah, the bone was – it went out and then it went back in. So he learned when he hooked
up. The natural hook.
Yeah, so when he learned when he hooked up with Yank Durham, his first manager, after he came back from the Olympics, had a master, you know, throwing a left hook that you couldn't defend it once he threw it. And that's what we saw, that sledgehammer, for so many years.
Mm. He was the greatest. Yep. And but did they like each other? They did.
Muhammad and Joe. Well, it's in my book, the intro to the book. It was my biggest professional accomplishment, hands down. I'll never come close to it again. That once Muhammad apologized to Joe in 2002 in the New York Times, and he said something to the extent that I apologize to Joe Frazier and his family, that if God ever called me to a holy war, I'd want Joe Frazier right there beside me. He's a good man, and he couldn't have been me.
Apologizing about making fun of his appearance?
It was brutal, man. I mean, Joe and the
brutal
kids. Let me tell you, back then in the early 70s, calling a guy Uncle Tom, that was from the South like that. Joe's kids were in fights all the time. He had to get security to take him to school. He cast it, you know, he casted Joe as the white man's champion, and turned, you know, his entire race against him. And then Joe said before that fight, he never said this before, but he goes, I prayed in the locker room. I said, good Lord, help me to kill this man tonight because he ain't righteous. And, you know, I heard some amazing stories. I was telling Priscilla the other day, I met Angelo Dundee in 1999 with Joe. I was at one of the big fights in Vegas. And Joe goes, say hello to my manager. His name's Prince. So Angelo goes, hey, Prince, you look a little bit young. Were you around in 1971? I said, I wasn't. I said, I was 1 year old, but I know as much about that fight as anybody. He goes, no, you don't. I'm going to tell you a story. So Muhammad comes out in the first round. He's tagging Joe left, right, left, right. The biggest sporting event ever. And Joe's wobbly. I didn't think he was going to get out of the first round. He's tagging him left, right, jab, hook, body shot. Joe comes back to the corner. Muhammad goes back to his corner. And I look at Muhammad in his eyes. He looks exhausted. I go, champ, what's up? He goes, hey, Ange, did you bring our lunch? And I go, what the fuck are you talking about, Muhammad? You got to get back out there in 40 seconds. Did I bring our lunch? He's like, hey, Ange, did you bring our lunch? He goes, Muhammad, are you going crazy? What the hell does lunch have anything to do with this? And he goes, and he turned around one last time, and it was the first time I ever saw fear in my man, Muhammad Ali's eyes. And he goes, did you bring our lunch? Because I just hit Smoking Joe with everything I ever had. And he looked at me and he goes, is that all you got, pretty boy? It's going to be a long goddamn night. I hope you bought your lunch.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You know, so, yeah. And then like, Joe told me, you know, the first five rounds of Manila, he was getting slaughtered. He's like, I couldn't see. I was blind in one eye. And he kept getting me with that jab and that uppercut and then body shots. And I started going off a smell. And then he just pushed me. And I found that second gear. And in the sixth round, he goes, don't you know I'm God? And he goes, and that was it. And I said, God, you're in the wrong place tonight. And he goes, bam, I just got him with that left hook. And the whole fight changed for the next six or seven rounds. But I would hear training regimens that were incredible. He would go to the Catskill Mountains in the middle of the winter when it was 10 degrees below zero with 10 or 15 pound ankle weights on and run for 5-6 miles at 3-4 in the morning. I go, why at that hour? He goes, because I told myself Muhammad was getting up at 2 in the morning. Mm. So the mindset.
Mindset. You're describing the same thing that goes on 20 years later with Bird and Magic.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Yep.
Bird used to get up in the morning and think, I wonder what he's doing. I wonder if he's up now. I wonder if he's gotten 100 shots in by now.
And the fact that I get to work with all four of them.
It gives me chills, those great sports things.
I hear the stories. I hear it directly from these guys. I heard it from Joe and Muhammad for all those years, and Bird and Magic are both clients. It's incredible hearing – you know, how they...
Does Bird have regrets about trying to help his mom's... that stupid thing that he did? So the way that Bird got hurt is he always considered himself an everyman. He does stuff for his mom. His mom needed a new driveway, and he did it himself and injured his back his debilitating back problems. Wow. And I always wonder, does he regret that?
I never brought that up to him. It's a great question.
Because it's just
It shortened his career and ruined his career.
It ruined his career. Yep. He helped, but it was an image he had in his mind. Magic is show business. I blue paved collar. My mom's driveway. You're fucking Larry Bird. You don't need to pave your mom's driveway.
Write a check and not worry about it.
Right? And I always thought, but that was the thing. Is he up? Has he been shooting already? That then carries on then. And then it's the Bulls, which you know, Dennis, were around.
Yeah.
That team, when they came back after they lost, when Jordan came back.
Right.
Do you know about this? So they come back. Jordan thinks, I can come back anytime I want. And he comes back and gets his ass handed to him. Pippen spoke about this on the 30-30. From the moment they walked off the court, him and Jordan were like, no, this is all business. This is never going to happen to us ever again.
Yeah.
And they were on a march. They only lost 9 games. Mm.
72 and 10.
And they went, what
well,
in the
no,
playoffs?
9 more games. They already lost that one.
I think they were. They only lost 2 games.
Yeah,
in
they
the
lost
playoffs.
2 games in the playoffs. They lost 12 games in a year.
No, 11, because they'd already lost the one. Right? The one that won them got them going.
Yeah. And it's that kind of stuff. But who were the Bulls competing against? They were competing against themselves.
There was nobody.
They were competing against perfection.
Yep, exactly. You had to.
And I've been around these guys that are at the peak of the peak. Roy Jones Jr. is a client, told me what happened when he was the best of the best and how you get distracted and how he got that first loss against Tarver. He goes, Darren, when you're at that level, when there's just no competition, normal people, everyday people have no idea what it takes to stay at that level night in and night out.
Everyone's shooting for you.
You know, yeah. True. And he goes, it just gets to a point. I started playing basketball. I was making rap albums. I got distracted.
Did you manage Mike Tyson?
No, but I've worked with Mike.
Okay,
amazing,
so
amazing
Mike
guy.
In Japan. I've talked to him about it.
He told me about it. Yeah,
yeah, he told me about it.
2 months ago, he told me coke, booze,
yeah,
everything.
But he thought he was invincible. He started to believe his own BS. He was only 19 years old. Yeah. You're believing your own BS.
He said he said at that point
the original millennial.
Yeah, he said at that point he had $200 million in the bank. He was still a brother from the street. And he said to me, he goes, Prince, who gives you a goddamn handbook how to deal with life at that point? He goes, Cuss was gone. You know, Customato
was
gone.
Cuss was a big one.
He goes, I was banging bitches and drinking and doing drugs in Japan because I just thought I was going to walk right through. You know?
Did you see that fight? Buster Douglas knocked him out.
Wow.
I remember it was one of the first fights I really paid for because I had a job or whatever. What year is that?
1990.
Okay. So that's when Thelonious becomes that pretty going pretty good. So I remember I had a big screen TV.
Yep.
And one of the ones with the projector, you know, it's thick and
rear
big.
Projection.
And everybody come over to my house. We're going to watch this thing. And I paid the $40 or whatever it was. It was over in a minute and 39 seconds.
God. Yeah.
What do you do when you got 20 people at your house and it's over?
Oh, you're like, talking about the quick one? That was Michael Spinks.
Oh, Spinks.
91 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. It was crazy.
Unbelievable.
And it's the greatest fighter who ever lived. Mike Tyson is getting knocked out by people in 90 seconds.
Crazy.
It's crazy. So you were there at it all, and that's what this book shows.
Well, I want to know how you got off Suboxone finally.
How I got off Suboxone. So that would be my spiritual awakening. July 2nd, 2008, my uncle Stu and his ex-girlfriend, who were both in the 12-step fellowship, and thank God still are, kept telling me about going to meetings. I tried it. I was listening to people, but I wasn't hearing. Right. You know, I wasn't taking the cotton out of my ears, putting it in my mouth. I thought I was better than everybody. I thought that I knew more than everybody. I can't identify with these people. They don't have my life, the ego.
How'd you rationalize that it's okay to drink once in a while? Because you can bullshit yourself about Suboxone, but you were drinking too.
Most people on Suboxone use other stuff. Yeah. You know that. That's very
not
right.
When they're thinking they're sober, do
well,
they?
Bob, what was happening too is I was flip-flopping once in a while off the Suboxone. When Evel Knievel passed away, I came off the Suboxone because he was a client for years, and I couldn't deal with it, and I was snorting Percocet and Vicodin into my hotel room about an hour before the memorial because I didn't know how to deal with it. I had no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah.
It was just devastating to me at that point. And some guy I grew up idolizing, and within 4.5 years of representing him, he was gone. But the spiritual awakening, so I had the last of my opiates in my hand. My uncle's yelling at me.
You're on the Suboxone.
I'm on the Suboxone.
And you're using opiates also?
At this point,
so you're on Subutex.
No, I was on Subutex. I didn't like Subutex. It had a crazy ting to it. It made me like.
But you can use opiates
Suboxone.
On Subutex.
Suboxone I took, not Subutex.
I know, but Suboxone you can't use opiates.
Yeah, you can.
Well, So here's what happened. I had this. I finished the Suboxone. I go into a bathroom. Now at this point, I had probably 15 hours with nothing.
Do you still have a job?
I'm losing my mind.
Still have a job?
Yeah, I'm still doing everything I'm doing with my clients. And I go into my bathroom, my apartment in New York City, open up a pill bottle to take Klonopin because that's what my uncle's girlfriend was telling me to take for the cravings.
For the Suboxone.
Wait,
I'm a little confused. You had a spiritual awakening.
Yeah.
And that was what, your family intervening?
No, this was it. This was my uncle and her that told me I got to get my ass to a meeting. So I ran into the bathroom to take a Klonopin. At this point, I'm off the Suboxone for almost 24 hours. I open up the Klonopin bottle.
The fun is about to begin.
Yeah.
Don't.
So the four Vicodins fall into my hand. Real opiates now that I thought I got rid of. I thought I flushed them all, and that was it. I fell on my knees, shaking, trembling, and crying. I can't do this anymore. At 1 minute, it looked like a gift, and within 10 seconds, I knew that it was the freaking devil. And somehow, I flushed them.
I wound up in the living room 30 seconds later, went online, found an AA meeting in the upper 90s in New York City. Wow. At 8 o'clock that night on the cab ride over, said to myself, holy shit, for the first time in my life, I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get high. By the grace of God, that was the day. It wasn't Hulk Hogan. It wasn't Magic Johnson. It wasn't Muhammad Ali or Dennis Rodman. I walked into a church basement with 150-plus addicts and alcoholics that showed me hope, love, and faith. And I threw my hands up without an ounce of shame whatsoever and said, I'm sick. I'm tired. I'm desperate. I need people's help. For 23 years, I've been living a freaking lie, and I don't want to live anymore. And I had five or six guys that I didn't even know come over to me, put their arms around me, give me a book with their numbers in it. I heard stories for the first time in my life that I can finally identify with. Where have these people been?
Was it the right Atlanta? There. Was it the Atlanta group?
No, this was in New York City, like in the upper 90s.
That's where the Atlanta group meets, I thought.
I don't know. But
Atlantic.
And I heard everything. I was a sponge.
That's
90 meetings.
Apartment in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I heard everything that Bob's heard. 90 meetings in 90 days. If you want what we have, do what we do.
What was the spiritual awakening? I didn't hear that.
It was on my knees with the Vicodin into my hands.
So that was your moment.
That was it.
I'm a little confused. So you decided to get off the Suboxone?
Yes.
And that was whose decision? Why were you doing that?
But he had done it before.
I know, but you just thought it was time or what?
Yeah, I was at the point where I was miserable. I literally was borderline suicidal.
Okay, so you were getting depressed. You were suicidal. You were taking other stuff also, yeah, drinking.
Exactly.
And then you thought, all right, I'll stop the Suboxone. That'll make me better.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. And that made you worse.
It made it worse.
The Vicodin shows up in your hand. And your family's on you saying, you got to get to a meeting.
Exactly.
Which you then did. Okay.
Which is what I did.
Got it.
The awakening was having the Vicodin in my hand and flushing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The moment of change.
And I tell people, I heard a voice. I truly heard a voice and felt the presence on my right shoulder tell me, I got you and you're ready. And I knew it. I wanted it with every fiber in my soul. I was ready to walk away from Prince Marketing Group, get me a job at McDonald's, not that anything's wrong with that, whatever it would have been.
Whatever it takes.
Give me what I'm craving so desperately, because from the outside, the world thought I had it all,
yeah,
but I was living a sick, sick lie.
Yeah, that's that moment. That's what people get when they're really ready.
And not everybody has a God moment. People get sent in for different reasons. I had it. It makes it not easier,
but it makes it easier. Yeah. It gives you a direction that you're definitely going to follow. You know what I mean?
And then, as we say, one day at a time became weeks at a time, became months and years. And then I started telling myself, you know, I got this platform. I have no problem talking about the anonymous part. That doesn't bother me. I truly feel that, you know, for most of us, I respect the old timers and the guys with 30, 40, 50 years, but I think it's a different world nowadays. And right. I think people need to hear that there is a solution.
You ever heard of a book called Getting Better by Nan Roberts, I think her name is? She was a New York Times writer. Mm-mm. So she went to Lois Wilson. This is part of why we felt comfortable about Celebrity Rehab. New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning writer, got sober in AA, wanted to write a book about it and was getting all the shame from the old timers and whatever. And she said, well, you know, one of the founders of AA is still alive. I'm going to go drive up and talk to Lois Wilson. And she said she went to
Bill Wilson's wife.
Who had more to do with starting AA than Dr. Bob did.
Exactly.
And Lois Wilson, she said, I'm thinking of writing an autobiography about my experience, and I can't exclude my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the most dominating thing in my life. And I wanted to come to you and say, what do you think? I think that the idea of remaining anonymous is an obsolete idea. And Lois Wilson, she says, in the book, Getting Better, she says she kind of looked and scowled and took a sip of tea. And then she looked out the window and said, well, maybe it is time.
Wow.
And so that was in 1988.
I was at Dr. Bob's house on my 9-year sober birthday.
I've been there.
I had another awakening, and the tour guide that was showing me around told me that Bill struggled with it in the early 70s. He felt it was time for people to get a little bit more public about it. I'm super respectful in the book about it. I don't mention AA at all. I refer to it as a 12-step fellowship.
Yeah, right.
Which is the right thing to do.
However you do it, but the idea that this profound thing that you just described that was mesmerizing that I had on some steps at a place Nate's been to, Nate the man, the board operator's been to, Alvarado and Wilshire is where I woke up.
This is where you ran into it.
So, Bob, look at that photo. Not to interrupt you, 3 months before I lost my dad.
And this guy
I'm on the phone with my sponsor.
another buddy with 29 years in Orange County, and my uncle, and every call ended with, man, your dad's looking down proud right now, and look at the guy's shirt.
And then that's a Bill W.'s house. Or
that's not a God moment. That's not a God moment.
Dr. Bob's house.
Dr. Bob's house, yeah.
Is that not a God moment?
Yeah, there you go. But we've all – I think every sober person, truly sober. Is that what you need to say? Because you say real alcoholic. We need to start saying real sober. Every real sober person has that moment. And I don't know if mine – I just have reinforced it to myself. You have to believe in that moment, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
And I remember mine was, and I've said it, I just woke up. I had OD'd. I wasn't dead. I woke up, and I – said out loud, why does this keep happening? You know, it's pretty obvious why it keeps happening.
You keep slamming
but,
drugs.
But another part of me said, it's the drug, stupid, like an internal voice, right? It's a drug, stupid. I've never done drugs since that day, November, March 15th, 1996.
Wow.
Right? That's crazy.
Crazy.
Moments of clarity, moments of grace, moments of
gift
of
that. Gift of desperation, yeah. I like to call it.
And so Drew is fascinated by it. That's why he kept asking you. Say it again.
Those moments of change, I just always try. First of all, two reasons. One is I'm always testing to make sure people really had one because you know them when you see them. And sometimes people are a little vague about it, whether they had or didn't have. You have to like – obviously I heard it from you. Yep. And then I'm just fascinated by how you get there because I'm always – I want people to get to that moment of change, right? And it's
– The people around the addict. I think the people around the addict help the addict have that moment.
I absolutely think so. I think it's a novel relationship. I think you probably start hanging out with somebody different. It's the new pair of glasses that gets you there, I think.
As they talk about it.
Yep. Yeah. Because were you hanging out with anybody different about that time?
Yeah, the guy that I was crashing at his place was a really sweet, nice guy, alcoholic guy, but not too predominant, not a drug guy. He was a very kind guy. I'm still friends with him. His name's Johnny Vargas.
Okay.
And just a very kind guy.
But you get seen. You get seen in a way you haven't been seen.
I just felt embarrassed for who I was. Which around the people I usually used with or the sober people, I wasn't embarrassed.
Well, you
but,
either
– But around you, him, I was kind of
well,
embarrassed.
Well, you were either angry or embarrassed. Or angry or you didn't care, right? Or they were using too. Or you were angry because they were judging you.
Judging me. You've got these categories of people. Yeah. You go to meetings and you're newly sober again or you're not sober, so then they're judging you.
Yeah.
Or you're with people that you're using with. This was a third place that I felt like – You know, like, I should have a life like him. It's like normal.
That's what gets you there. I've seen that over and over and over again where suddenly see people – and often following just – people say, hey, I was chatting with a guy. I used to have coffee with him. And very different than the guy normally. And then I was walking by a mirror outside of Macy's and, oh, my God, I saw myself. Mm. And I couldn't believe it. That was me. You know, it's like you see yourself after being seen by somebody else. It's your uncle
he's talking
uncle.
About.
It was my uncle and his ex-girlfriend, Andrea. Yeah, absolutely. And then Bob, what a gift.
Why didn't you just dismiss it? Like, ah, fuck you, you're just jealous
You're judging
of me.
Me.
You're judging
jealous.
Me. Why couldn't you?
I was so at that jumping off point, as they say. I was truly so sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I was given the gift of desperation in that bathroom, in that moment.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is, and you'll understand this, how amazing is it when one day you wake up, when you start that journey, you don't know when it's going to happen, and you realize, holy shit, I've got the power of choice back in my life.
Right.
What?
Right.
Oof. That's when you start realizing you're getting up in the morning, you're brushing your teeth, you're eating your breakfast, you're going to the gym, you're doing whatever, and you're like, holy shit, I'm not even thinking about it right now.
There was a couple of bumps in the first 90 days, and then I was sure.
Yeah.
Like, one was about – I had about 3 weeks and I was walking to an AA meeting down Sunset Boulevard and my drug dealer pulled up. Mm. Like, oh, my God, Bob, what are you doing?
Where
and
you
he
been?
Put two balloons. He put two balloons in my hand on Sunset Boulevard near Silver Lake Boulevard. And I was like, no, 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 John. No, no, no. No, no, no. And he goes, for you. How are you doing? Where have you been? Like, I was like, and I had to say no, 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 and hold it like, and I'm going to drop it.
I had a very unusual feeling hearing that story.
What?
I just had a very unusual feeling hearing that story.
It's crazy, right?
Well, not only is it crazy, I hope he's dead.
Oh, come on. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. Yeah. Great guy.
And that's a very unusual feeling for me. I just was like, I got, he's disgusting. Yeah.
But that power.
He almost took your life away from you in that moment. Yeah. Almost took your life
Well,
away.
Doctors do that too nowadays.
Yeah, right. All the time.
That
I feel like forgive.
When
them.
I got to
I
that
feel that
meeting,
forgive them. They know not what they do.
I know.
That's
I know.
I feel that
he knows what he. John knew what he was doing. So when I got to that meeting, I was shell shocked. Like, what the hell just happened? And I kept telling people what happened. I shared about it. Like, most people didn't believe me. I go right there, right two buildings right down. Mm. And it was just, and I remember that whole night, I felt like 2 feet off the ground. Like, this sobriety thing is real.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's,
and you want other addicts to have that experience.
100%. I tell people it's the greatest thing I've done for the longest amount of time. And not, I don't say this egotistically or arrogantly, but Priscilla will vouch for it. There's probably not many people in the history of this fellowship that hits more road meetings than me.
Yeah.
In the past year and a half, London, Sydney, Monaco, and
London
Guiala,
is good.
Anguilla, Turks and Caicos. It is the greatest thing in the world to go online, find a meeting, walk into a room where you know nobody, but you know everybody, and walk into a room where you're not home, but you're home. That little 1 hour, that little spiritual little hit that I get, it just makes the day so much
better. Anything interesting in the different recoveries around the world?
I remember in Brisbane, Australia, they make you get in line and go up to a microphone and speak. That was a little bit different. In Sydney last year, we went during Christmas, and this was funny. They love when you put your hands up. Oh, I'm from New Jersey in the U.S. Oh, we have an American. And so they're like, hey, Darren, would you take us out? And I started doing the Lord's Prayer, and they started yelling, no. We do the Serenity Prayer at the end here. Mm. And they pulled me aside after, and they said, oh, we don't bring in the Lord's Prayer. It's all about spirituality. And so that was
really
that was
secular.
Unique. Yeah, that was unique. But I've been to some are
– Where did you feel the most accepted? England was really – I felt like people were excited that young people were at meetings in England.
England
Not that
great.
I'm young, but this was like 15 years ago.
England had incredible meetings. I love Montreal. Montreal was the second
Montreal
country to get – Get AA.
Montreal
in the late 30s.
Is amazing.
Really?
Amazing.
Yeah, yes. It's amazing. Wow. So what's next for you?
Next for me, man. It's really just spreading the gift of hope and recovery, man. My business is where it needs to be. Thank God. Obviously, it's still always going to be a priority, but nothing comes before my sobriety.
And when you see a sports person struggling with addiction, do you think, boy, I'm going to get that call pretty soon?
Now I'm starting to think that way. Yeah, now I'm starting to think like Chris Heron is a good friend. He's doing it.
If
like
it's in Boston, he gets the call.
Yeah, we talk about it. Like how
we had Chris on this show.
Yeah, I think we did.
Seemed like we did. Yeah, we've worked with him. Like Chris Heron,
amazing story.
Good guy.
It's pretty crazy.
Yep.
All right, we got to wrap things up here, gentlemen.
This is
very good stuff. And,
get the book, Aiming High, if you
want
to read about the greatest icons in sports who are just a notch below God.
And Facebook, go meet Darren
tomorrow
and
we'll
Ron.
Be
but
there.
Tomorrow I'm going to be there at 12:30. According to Dennis, he'll be there at 12:30. So
did he say 6:30 or 12:30?
He first said 6:30, and then he said the things at 1. I'm going to be there at 12:30. That's what he said. It is the Barnes & Noble at the Grove. I think everyone in Los Angeles knows where that is. If you're close by, it's just inside the Grove there by the Farmer's Market.
And thank you, Priscilla.
Thank you, Priscilla. Thank you,
Priscilla. Thank you, producer.
And Sue. Thank you.
Where to find the book?
Amazon.
Amazon's where I bought it.
Yeah, everywhere.
I love Amazon. It comes so fast.
She always says.
You don't like Amazon?
No, I love it. Yeah, no, we do.
We're addicted to it. That's
you can
why
get anything.
That's why all the stores are closing up all over the world, because we love that instant bang.
No, but you know what? My new thing, I'll just end with this. I was at Bed Bath & Beyond trying to find wooden shower mats. I love the wooden shower mats, right? And they didn't have them. So the girl tells me, go online. I said, you don't think I knew that I could go online?
No, she
and
means
get it?
Bed Bath & Beyond online. She doesn't mean Amazon
online. You're putting yourself out of business.
No, she means Bed Bath & Beyond. She means go there, not Amazon.
She didn't specify Bed Bath & Beyond. She just said you can get this online, you know. And I was like, really? Educate me. I like going to Bed Bath & Beyond, but if you don't want a job, okay.
Did anybody on Facebook have any questions or anything? And the Facebook folks that are out there, anything? Here she is.
Hello, I'm back. You had a lot of really great comments, and you were very useful in a lot of people's feelings about addiction. And let's see.
You're speaking to Darren.
Yes, Darren. Everybody was really moved by your information. I don't know if anybody noticed, but one of the lights went out while we were here, too, when you were right talking about your moment. So the spirituality was definitely coming through.
She's going to have you on her ghost program.
Yeah. Well, if he wants. But, you know, somebody said, anyone's worth saving as long as they want to be helped. And everybody was agreeing that this 12 steps helped for their loved ones. And you know, just kind of positive stuff. No real questions, really.
Good.
But right. It was, you know, very well received. And everybody loved Rodman. They thought it was great.
Great.
So. All right, Darren.
And it's just inspiring to me. It really is. But
well, thanks for having me again. It'll be supporting us. Really appreciate you guys.
And Drew gets to stay a little longer tomorrow because they just pushed the time. So yes. He'll get to stick with you.
Oh, good. Oh, perfect.
We might have to pull you in on the Q&A.
Oh, I'll
get
whatever,
there early.
Whatever
and
you want.
Push the time. Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
See you later.
Bye. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBCB and Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sync One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Derry W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.